Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast, the only podcast that invariably always gets it right. My name is Craig Cairns, and you have heard of the De Boers, you've heard of the Benders, you've heard of the Azards and the Paxiaus. I have got for you tonight the Andersons. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Craig.
Hello, Craig.
Hello, Craig. We've got the Craigs as well.
Exactly. And we are going
such
to...
Such a bunch of bland guys, really. All the same names.
Thanks, Tony. I've tried my best to jazz it up.
And no, you can't. It's impossible. Craigs and Andersons, we're all the same. Boring stuff.
So, yeah, we are going to... just a sec. Okay, I'm not going to bother to explain what's just happened there. We're just going to crack on with it and we're going to go over the weekend's action, the Premiership action. We're going to start. Do you think we should start with a live game on Saturday?
Why the hell not?
St Mirren 1, Rangers 1. And St Mirren continuing their excellent home form with a draw at home to two Rangers, as I said, Ayunga opening the scoring. And for a long time, it looked like some of them were going to take all 3 points in this until a penalty award. Now, let's just get that out of the way quickly, Craig. Any issues with the penalty award?
The only issue was that he didn't give it to begin with because it was booked him for diving. It was a very clear penalty. I thought it was a penalty when I watched it and it amazed me, and by the way, I did appreciate your little VAR joke there. I hope the listeners got it as well. But the penalty was so clear that I can't believe they had to like send them over to watch like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 replays. It's like walk over, right? That's a penalty. Back to the pitch and give it instead of footering about. It was a clear penalty, and it was a shame for St Mirren on the basis that I think right up until they scored and probably for the 5-10 minutes after that they were very good value for it, but they did what it was a kind of microcosm of every single St Mirren season in that or recently where they started really well, you think they're finally going to do this and then self-destructed a wee bit. The introduction of Bacchus, and Bacchus is a brilliant player, but to me it felt like his mind was in Qatar, perhaps understandably, and I don't think he really gave the best of himself, and I think they lost a bit of kind of momentum and a little bit of control.
Do you think
that
was the reason why he didn't play, Craig?
Yeah, I think it 100% would
have. That's like being one of your best, but I was shocked. I was going to say I was quite impressed well St Mirren played, considering they weren't even playing possibly their best team out there. And I do think it seems weird that if you've decided a guy's head's maybe not in it to start a game, probably means that you just don't bring him on whatsoever. He did nearly score, to be honest.
Yeah, I can understand why you would think, well, we're going to try and see out a game against Rangers. Let's maybe bring on one of the best defensive midfielders in the league. It sort of makes sense. But that was not the reason they didn't win the game. That there was obviously lots more to it than that. But
they kind of let them off the hook, do you not think, Craig? Because I thought it's you know the rubbish that Johnson spoke about a few weeks back about the Old Firm. I think this is where there is a point in it, is that when it hits the late in the games, despite the fact that you're under any problems, no issues, you naturally start sitting back because you expect Rangers to sort of start throwing everything at you. But I think the only reason that happened was because St Mirren kind of allowed it.
Yeah, it was about 5-10 minutes after they scored, they just started to retreat. Because I said during the first half that if it had all the hallmarks of a proper last stand for a manager capitulation, where you know, like when Mowbray got sacked at that same stadium when they got beat 4-0, when they just collapsed. And it felt like, you know, if St Mirren got that first goal, which ultimately they did, we'll talk about the calamity for that soon enough. But it felt like at that point, Rangers might fall apart and it might be, you know, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0 quite easily, because St Mirren have the capability of damaging teams like that now. Their form has kind of tailed off a wee bit recently, but they are still at home a pretty tough prospect, and they do have players to take advantage of mistakes. That's what Stephen Robinson's teams have always been great at.
They're so aggressive, exactly. As well. It's like when you've got the two strikers and a team and a manager who's so willing to sort of put the ball in the box, that if you're not at it, then and the ball's going to be bouncing around in your box all the time, they're just going to take advantage. Second balls, they'll just eventually kill you.
Tony, will either of these managers still be here when we come back after the World Cup?
Well, I think Stephen Robinson absolutely will still be in position.
He could maybe get pinched, no?
I don't know.
I think a few jobs.
Is that right? Who's he been
linked with? I wasn't suggesting he was going to get sacked.
Who's he been linked with?
Northern Ireland. All right. Was it Luton?
They played for Luton for a while, so it was them. Their manager just went to Southampton.
So they did. They had that guy who just doesn't seem like an English Premier League manager by any stretch of imagination. I may be wrong, but it just made I saw him on the telly. What's going on? Sorry, but there's the Northern Ireland one. I mean, if that's right, then he might find that extremely difficult to turn down if he gets offered it. And I would
didn't
quite
rule
like,
out when he was asked a couple of weeks ago.
I would also quite like to see a Stephen Robinson type manager at international level, because you know we always talk about Scotland. We always want Scotland to play the sort of Scottish way when they go international. I would love to see Stephen Robinson bring his style of management to the international stage and see how certain countries sort of deal with that. It's like aggression and the guys that he would decide to pick up there.
Does Curtis Main have a Northern Irish granny?
Fingers crossed. But with Van Bronckhorst, I mean, the only thing that will keep him in a job from what I'm hearing is they don't want to pay him off because it's meek stuff. I was going to come on to talk about Van Bronckhorst, and I was trying to work him out because I don't want to be disparaging. I mean, what he achieved last season in that European run was superb. But it's like he's a relatively tactical manager, but he doesn't seem to really have a style. So we talk about the negatives of the managers who are sort of really wedded to a philosophy and how that can sometimes work against you. But I think with Van Bronckhorst, a team like Rangers, when you're going to be on top all the time, I mean, we're going to come on and talk about Martindale, and there might be elements that would be similar for him if he moved up a level that I've heard people talk about. But with them not having that sort of like really clear style and like vindication in what he wants to do, he sort of played the matches in Europe game to game, used the crowd really well. And even when he went away for home, they didn't do numbers a lot of the time. I know the Dortmund result was a bit of an outlier, but a lot of the other games they were losing 1-0 or picking up a draw, and then they were just like using Ibrox to sort of blow teams away in the second leg. But I don't really, and I've never really, against Celtic in the Cup last season, he'd done really, really well there. That was quite a tactical victory that he got in the semi-final. But I've never really thought how Rangers play under Van Bronckhorst. It's all about just moments, a bit of quality. And he's doing that thing now where managers do, I'm going to come on to talk about that with sort of Lee Johnson and Lewis Stevenson, but with the Kamara being plucked back into the starting lineup, that always screams to me, a guy he didn't fancy, that's a manager who's in his last dance, he doesn't really know what to do, so it's not working with other people, so he might as well bring in Kamara. And I thought Michael Stewart made a really fair point about Alex Lowry on Sports Scene, because when you're struggling, I always think it's a good time to bring in a young attacking player because he's full of energy. He wants to go for the game. He's desperate to impress. And other players are sort of falling by the wayside and look like they don't want to be there. And that's maybe the best time to try and do something a bit more left field and bring someone who hasn't been tainted by years and years of football at that level. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to work now. And the longer they, if they're going to hold off because it costs $4 million, then it's going to cost them. They're not going to win the league. I probably can't see them winning a cup, and it'll cost them a lot of anger anyway at Rangers. But with the two Champions League places, the board might think they can get away with it for the rest of the season and then make the change at the end of the season when maybe it's a bit cheaper.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, anything to add on Rangers, Craig, or should we move on to the next match?
Just to briefly, it was Meek, and I think that Van Bronckhorst is not a... his character doesn't come across as particularly inspiring, and I think that's maybe what you've seen. I think there might have been a bit of a carryover last season of just a continuation of what Gerrard was doing really well anyway, and the players were just kind of playing, not playing for themselves, but you know what I mean, like they everything was in place. They just kind of, he didn't change that much, he made small changes here and there, and then the players, it seems like I've just not taken to Van Bronckhorst at all. There's no, I think Ewan mentioned this, like there are so many individuals in that Rangers squad that you know are better than what you're seeing from them. And yeah, they've not been helped by the injury situation, the fact that they're having to play Leon King and James Sands as it was at centre-back in this game. Clearly, two substandard players for this level. They're not Premiership defenders. Sands just not good enough, full stop, for Rangers. King, obviously a very young player that might grow into it, but that was a catastrophic error by King.
The decision is unbelievable.
Just get rid of it.
You know, you talk about naivety and young players and stuff, and it's Scottish players now that are coming through are being coached, you know, play out from the back and all the rest of it. But I don't believe that regardless of what level you're playing at, you're told to take a touch in your own 6-yard box when you're defending
a rebound. Yeah.
At the same time, and this doesn't count for this exact moment, but it speaks to a larger problem. He's getting spoken through the game by James Sands. I mean, and the crisis for Rangers started. I mean, the real, like, visible crisis, if you like, started when Conor Goldson went out of that team.
If you had Goldson and King, I think King would look a lot better alongside him. And that's one thing. I'm not writing him off as a player. I just think he's been put in a very difficult position to be suddenly relied on. Any young centre-half, I don't think, unless they're, like, clearly going to be the next, you know, the next big thing, which I think he's probably somewhere in the middle of being maybe the next quite good defender, then you don't want to have to rely on them for a big run of games. You want to be able to dip them in and out, and they've not been able to do that. And he's probably, it's sink or swim, and he's probably sunk a wee bit. His career will probably recover from it. I wouldn't worry too much about that. It might not be the worst thing for him. Assuming he's okay, we've not heard anything that, you know, a wee spell out the team. He's obviously, there's also a break anyway for a month, and maybe one of the other centre-halves is back can take the weight off him a bit. But yeah, nah, Rangers just no good. Like, there was nothing about that performance to like. I thought Kent had some bright moments. He was probably,
but they just
the
funnel
one...
everything through him.
Yeah.
So it's like if you give a player of that quality the ball every second you have it, then yes, there'll be bright moments in there. But the relying on him constantly, I don't think it's good for him, because people just double up, triple up on him, and then they have nothing on the other side that takes advantage of the fact that they've got all these other players that, in theory, have to be free because you're doing that.
I think it's something that's overlooked. It's like some players are good players when they're used sparingly and when they appear in the game sparingly. I talk about Jordan Jones a lot. I think Kent's quite a similar, obviously better, but a similar player in that if you constantly have to keep giving that player the ball, they can look uninterested in all the rest of it, because they're just knackered, because they're just like constantly having three players around them, all the rest of it. And sometimes you need spread the creativity and just having time on the ball around the team. But no, there's nothing else to say about this Rangers team. Every aspect of it is broken and needs a new manager, and I think they'll get one.
Right, I think that's enough Rangers. I think we're getting a bit obsessed there. Let's move on to the basement of the division, where Killie ensured they will not be bottom when the league resumes after the World Cup with a win over Hibernian. It was a penalty from Daniel Armstrong that won the game. We'll stick with you, Craig. Was it a deserved win?
Barely. No, I don't think it was. It was a draw. It was a 0-0 draw, that game, all over. Killie did not create much at all in the way of chances in the whole game. It came at the absolute right time, the result, because I think Killie had been doing pretty well up until that Livy game. Even the St Johnstone defeat wasn't the best, but the last two performances were rank rotten. This performance was marginally better. There was all the things you want to see from your team if you are battling at the bottom in terms of desire. The defensive performance at the end was resolute. There were mistakes, but everyone was putting their bodies on the line. But Hibs made it very easy to defend against. Hibs played into our hands at the end with just, you know, shelling balls into the box. If you've got centre-halves that are just wanting to head in and put the ball away, we brought Ash Taylor on to help with that. That made it very easy. But I think we're halfway through that Kyle Lafferty ban now, and I think that's a good sign, because we've managed to win two games without him. Ennis Cameron, I thought, did all right in this game. He's clearly not going to be the answer, but he gave the defense, he kept the defenders quiet, or sorry, kept the defenders, probably kept Porteous quiet, if you
occupied,
know what I mean.
Which is
it's a weird thing to say, because you know, Porteous is a centre half, but we know that he can, given time, can create things, and he wasn't really allowed to. So there were things to like about the Killie performance, and there was obviously loads of changes. Liam Donnelly probably had his best game for a while. Fine, he was probably made to look easy for him again. Fraser Murray came back in the team. I think he's the fact that we've got another option as a wide player made a difference. He had a good game, I thought. But just on the whole, I was glad to get the win, but like a lot of it, it wasn't exactly an enthralling performance. But sometimes you just need to win games.
Yeah, especially when you're at that end of the league, you've got to take advantage when you have teams that are in sort of free fall, if you like, and that's what Kilmarnock were able to do. Before we go on to the VAR decisions that I know Craig, me you were going to talk about, I was just going to talk about Hibs pretty briefly, just overall.
That was my next question, Tony.
Oh, thanks. Sorry, mate.
You don't have any faith in me. No, it's all right. Continue. Just continue.
It's just, I think, like, overall, we're seeing now that I'm talking with the Ron Gordon show at Easter Road, we can still see that the same thing's happening regardless of the manager. And regardless, I mean, we're talking, like, it must be kicking around 50 players have been brought in since Ron Gordon. I might be going over the top there. I didn't check it, but I think everyone knows there's been a lot of turnover in players there. And I think what's really frustrating, if you're a Hibs fan especially, is that it's like, we had the Petrie years where everything was about penny pinching and like living within your means, but like maybe even beyond living within your means. And it was all about infrastructure and everyone moaned about that. And it was very unambitious. Now we've got the flip side, where we've got someone who's willing to invest. The money from season tickets is getting invested back into the club. He's doing some things that people might think are a bit funny, but at least they're attempts to sort of boost attendances. He's rebuilt all the hospitality. He's trying to make more money out of sponsors, all the business side, which is great. But he just doesn't seem to fucking accept that he needs to hand over the footballing side to guys. His job's to go and find the guys who can do it properly and build an infrastructure in the football side. And that's what's completely lacking. I mean, we don't... Anyone that has any sort of faith about Kinsale, just because he was in English football, I think would be... And my impression is that would be like misguided. And then obviously you've got his laddie at the top of the sort of recruitment chain, which is ridiculous. Johnson coming in being told that he needs to sort of train him as a recruitment thing, which is funny because now managers don't really do that as much. So you're asking a manager who doesn't really do that as much anymore to sort of teach someone else to do it. It doesn't make sense. So it's very frustrating when you see the club sort of being ambitious and willing to spend money. I mean, some of the wages is eye watering, but it's not being done right in the footballing sense. So it's just like you have the same problem. You're signing the same standard of player, but you're just spending a hell of a lot more money doing it. And then quickly coming on to Johnson, who deserves a lot of criticism for recent performances. He's desperate to make changes. He's done that. Lewis Stevenson was one of our better players on the day, don't get me wrong, but whenever you see Lewis Stevenson come into the Hibernian midfield, it means things have been going wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's the
Tony,
sign.
I was, you know that I don't cover this league this season, but I got back into the car after, sorry to interrupt you, but after covering the game that I was on, and had the radio on just as I was kind of driving home. And I actually laughed at the mention of Paul Hanlon. And then like later on when I watched the highlights and I saw Lewis Stevenson, I kind of chuckled again. I thought, how are Hibs still here? It was a joke about 4 years ago that they still had David Gray, Darren McGregor. You know what I mean? And it's like, why are these guys still? And not only that, they're still the two of the most reliable players that you've got.
Yeah. And then we're seeing like with Hibs, is that things were going pretty well, and it's like when we made all these 15 signings, at least three or four of them look good, and obviously some of them are guarantees, like Marshall and Boyle. They're not really, you don't need a recruitment team to work out that these guys are going to improve you. Cabraja, he's not perfect, but he certainly looks like a very, very good football player. So there was elements of it that I liked, and the guys up front, the big man Mick, he seems like a good player, but we were playing a 4-3-3 and that was working. And obviously, predominantly, we like to play down, I think, as Lee Johnson calls it, a bomb alley, which to me and you is the flanks. And it was always about doubling up in those areas. So you always like to, and we were doing that really quite well in the, and especially on the good run. There were still elements not perfect, but you could understand it. If you want to play predominantly down the flanks, I don't understand why the 3-5-2 would be the formation you would go for. And now, before, even when you had Juhan, who wasn't very good, but because he had so much pace, with him and Boyle, teams had to push back. You know, like, so Hibs would always be able to press teams really high. They had to make changes to their systems just because of the style of player Hibs had. Now that that's not there, and we're being forced to maybe play through teams a bit more, it's really not working. We're playing this way. Campbell came back in. I quite like Campbell. I think he was good. He was the right choice to be there. But no McCurdy, no Boyle, no Juhan. It's like there's no reason for a team to not push up a bit and not get involved in the game a bit more. So I just think tactically he's getting that all wrong now. And it was going well before with the 4-3-3. I think maybe you bring in certain different players, but I don't think you change, rip it up and start again. And from the second he's done it, we've won one game since he done it. And I know the St Johnston game and St Mirren game, Hibs played pretty well for periods, but it's all went wrong. And now the problem is Hibs were playing quite well. They still had flaws, but they were doing good. They looked like a team that was going to get better and better. And now he's made those changes. We had a few bad results that we probably were the better team in. Now we're going down the way. Now we're playing shitter. And now we've got these six defeats in seven. With that fixture list coming up, it almost looks like curtains for him, because if he loses the next three games, which is very, very, very possible, playing the Old Firm Hearts and Livingston, then, I mean, 10 defeats in 11 games is sackable for any manager on the planet.
And the thing that struck me from Hibs is there was no creativity at all. All the chances that came at the end, and I think Johnson used the word of peppering the killer goal. He got a bit of criticism for it, but I kind of agreed with him that they did pepper the goal in the sense that there was lots of balls being flung across. McCurdy was being very direct. McCurdy's not good. He's not. He doesn't seem to have any creativity. I was expecting a bit more of that, but he's quite direct, and he, you know, hits balls hard and low and plays like percentages, and I can imagine him actually, that could be useful. But Kelly are not exactly defensively solid, but there wasn't ever a threat of cutting us open. It was just like lots of through balls and low balls and driven balls and things that our defenders could clear. I mean, obviously you watched Chris Stokes last week unable to do that, but on the whole, if you put balls across a box, defenders will punt it clear. Mm-hmm. And just asking us to keep doing that, and we did. I think again, I'll mention Lewis Mayo. I think he has something really about him, and he's someone I really like. But on the whole, Kelly were able to defend well because Hibs didn't do anything that challenged us.
Very, very quickly. Like, I mean, we didn't do the VAR thing, and I know we've taken too much time on this because I ranted on about Hibs there because it was my opportunity to do so. Obviously, we had the goal disallowed from Melkerson that looks like it's onside. It was given offside on the pitch. It does look like they're level by the lines. But, Craig, I was going to defer to you because you know things that most of us don't need.
So first and foremost for me is that's a very tight decision. And I think the way, because the cameras can't be perfect, they can't do it perfectly. It's not within the capabilities of any technology that exists. This automated stuff coming in, Champions League stuff. But up until now, what we've got, what they've got in any league, they can't make the decision perfectly because the ball, the frame rates of cameras, all the rest of it, there's lots of articles about that. So for me, when it's that tight, you should be deferring to what's been given by the guy who's standing in line with it, looking at it, because there's not evidence to overturn, just like anything else. They want to treat it as factual, and they are still treating it as factual. The difference being in Scotland that they have these thick lines, and if the lines overlap at all, then they're supposed to basically say it's onside, which will give a lot of goals. I don't really agree with it because, again, I think what happened should be that the linesman says it's offside, it's pretty tight, we've not got evidence that he's wrong, it is offside. That must have been the tightest possible decision to not be given onside, to be honest. I think Melkerson's knees may be just ahead of the back heel of whichever of us defenders it is, but it was the only time Melkerson created anything half decent in the game, and unfortunately,
Neil's got over a kick, remember?
Well, yeah, no, that was nice. There's like things about him when you go, do you know what? You can see why Hibs signed him, but the rest of the time, you're like, he's just not got the minerals, he's not got the physicality. He's a young player, he might develop that, but someone who could have done.
What about the penalty?
I think it's a weird one, right, in that it is a penalty. The decision's correct fundamentally for me, but would that foul have been given if they'd known it was in the box? I don't think so. Now, people talk about this all along, it should be a foul wherever it is on the park. The assistant flags for it. I don't know what the fuck Michael Stewart was watching. He clearly flags to give the foul, not to give a corner.
See, this is what I wanted to check, because that was my impression. So I was like, I don't like it, but I was like, it is a clear and obvious error because he's given a free kick and it's inside the box. So so there's a debate if you give a corner if it's a clear and obvious. So I got that. So when he said that, I was like, all right, that's different from what my interpretation. Well, I don't like it as a penalty. I don't really think it. But I think you're right. Like the rules would probably stay as, and I think when you slow it down, especially there's slight contact and all that. But
I think he's given a foul. The assistant flagged for it. It probably is a foul. It's soft. It's not exactly someone that I knew that used to referee with used to say, well, you get soft boiled eggs and hard boiled eggs, but they're both still boiled, and it's kind of the same thing. Like it is still a foul. And
referee banner.
Brilliant, world class. But once he's given the foul, then VAR looks and says, oh, that is in the box.
Yeah.
Then,
so that's,
then it's a penalty.
Why does it fucking take so long?
Two and a half minutes. I don't know what they were looking at.
Because it's not the clear and obvious error thing. It is basically because he's given a foul and it's in the wrong bit and it's in the box. So that should have been like fast as anything. But
yeah,
I mean, like I'm taking up too much time here with this game. There'll be plenty more to talk about VAR, I'm sure, Craig, so don't worry.
Exactly, yeah, it's all good stuff. And plus, as you were mentioning before we came on, last week there was endless kind of goals and action to talk about, and this week it's not been quite as exciting. It has been more...
I mean, that fucking game was dreadful, really, Craig's opening sentence about it was 0-0 every day of the week is so true. So true.
So us talking about decisions a wee bit more, I don't think that's really a bad thing. We do have to go through the remaining matches a little bit quicker than we otherwise would have, though, but I think we'll be okay. So we'll start at Pittodrie. Aberdeen are third after beating Dundee United in the Saturday evening kickoff with a Bojan Majovski penalty. Of course, he scores every penalty that he takes other than the one that he missed. And United are still away... Still to win away from home this season. So are Killy, as Craig will know all too well. There's one other team in the league who has a worse away record than United. Anybody want to guess who they are?
St Mirren.
It's St Mirren. Well done. Ooh. Same number of points.
They were talking about it on the the telly, and like they kept going on about their brilliant home record, brilliant home record. Yeah. So I didn't realise it, like, from, I wouldn't have known otherwise.
It's the same number of points. So whereas United's is a win, St Mirren's is three draws, or is it the other way about? Something along those lines. Anyway, no wins. No, of course, it's three draws for United and the win for St Mirren. That's where their points have come from. Let's
talk about that game.
That's probably where the ad's going to go in now, because I've left that gap.
Let's talk about Fowler's balls.
So, Tony, Aberdeen are in third. We're going into this World Cup break, whatever you want to call it. Jim Goodwin's first full season in charge. Is it pretty much job done so far?
I think if you're in third at this stage, it can be, but they'll be like any team that would be up in third just now. You'd be disappointed because if any team was playing really, really well and had any real sort of consistency home and away, you could actually be safe in third. The fact that even like teams like Hibs, St Mirren, Hearts, I mean, they've all had bad periods in the season, and they're still well within the capabilities of reaching that. And I think Aberdeen will be disappointed at that, but there is no doubt that Jim Goodwin, from what he took over and what he presided over towards the end of last season, and this, he's made a huge difference. They are much better to watch. They take advantage of teams' deficiencies, and when things go Aberdeen's way, they're really, really good at sort of compounding it, and they've scored a hell of a lot of goals, which always helps with the punter down the pub, because you go away and you've seen loads of goals or loads of talk about. And I think that actually buys you breathing space when the times might go a bit awry. And I do think stuff like that's really, really important. Like, perception's huge.
They've made going out and spending money on your attack look easy. I mean, how often do we see teams go out and do it in Scotland and it fails? But they've gone out and taken two gambles, and okay, the jury's still out in some ways in the two of them, but you can't argue with the return from the two of them so far.
They're both brilliant to watch players together.
Yeah, they're fun exactly players, which is, you know, you get boring, efficient, good players, but both of them, there might be rough edges, but especially Duck, I think he's been a fantastic signing. I really love watching him play. And he wins a lot of fouls, and obviously that was what led to no doubt about this one. He's maybe been criticised for the way he's won penalties before, including last week, but this one was a definite penalty. And
is there a game that goes past? And normally when you talk about goalkeeping errors, there's a lot of exaggeration when you talk about them. And I'm an expert on goalies being shite for your teams through when I was born and the team that I've watched. People would always say every game. It was a lie. It wasn't really. It was like maybe five or six, maybe even seven over the 38 games. It's genuinely every fucking match, though. It's like he's he's going to cost them. Like, they could go down without... he could be the difference between, like, seventh in 12th, which just sounds like absolutely ridiculous. Because you can just pull out of that. And it's Duke. They must have watched how easy he goes down. He likes to buy fouls. This is something they must have been talking about in training all week in the build-up. And he's still like the most naive. Like, he's going nowhere. All he wants is for those hands to come out. And of course he fucking obliges. Of course he does.
It was, and I actually thought United were all right in this game. Like, I don't think... If they have a good goalkeeper, jury's still out on the manager as well, and maybe the defence is a bit rickety, but I do wonder how much of that ricketiness is down to the goalkeeper situation, because middle to front, especially at the end when they were chasing the game, they created chances, they looked, you know, the good players in the team looked like they were doing good player things. Levitt, McGrath, these guys are creating opportunities, and if they keep creating enough opportunities, they will score goals, and that's great for them. And I do think they are on the precipice just now of, like, those three or four games after the World Cup, but before the transfer window, might say a lot, because will they get detached and the confidence is down even by the time they even bring in another goalkeeper, assuming they do, it'll be too late? Or will it be a case that, you know, they keep themselves in touch and then bring someone better in and, you know, cruise away? The league's really tightened up. Like, I don't think even any team, there's not a team in the league where you're going, you know, they've got no chance of the top six, and that includes United. Like, it just will depend on that. But Aberdeen deserve to win this game just about, I think. But they weren't, I mean, you've seen them absolutely blow teams away quite a few times at Pittodrie this season, and they didn't do that. And
Dundee United got better as the game went on as well, which is a bit unusual for them because obviously confidence is such a huge problem. But just before you go on, Craig, just really quickly, just Dundee United's biggest problem is they still have just glaring gaps in their team. There's nothing wrong with, like, they've got some really good players, but it's just the same things every week where you're like, that's a problem. They still lack that. They still lack a goalkeeper, lack their sort of like powder puff in the middle of the park when the going gets tough. There's nobody that really takes responsibility and maybe doesn't push forward, like, and the holes get loved that they can pick off. And like you're saying, the defence just isn't great anyway. And when you add a calamity goalkeeper there, that's why I couldn't believe the Graham one where he ducks. Surely, if that goalkeeper's behind you, you just take the responsibility and just fucking head it away and don't rely, even if you think no one's coming. Just always focus on heading it up the park. But I interrupted you, Craig, so on you go.
No. I mean, that's a fair point. And yeah, the wing-backs are the other positions. I think they're a wee bit weakened, but they could probably be passable. I think they are... I don't think their team is going to get detached
season. That's something I was going to say about Dundee United, is they do seem to at least be picking up points. It's quite erratic, but they're still keeping themselves there. Nobody's getting cut adrift. And we're now in a unique season, or the unique part of this unique season, in that teams, especially for like new managers, now got a chance on the training pitch to... Nobody's away on international duty, really, other than a couple of players. So Fox is one of these guys that's probably really going to welcome having that extra time to... Yeah, exactly. And then it gives you a lot of time to potentially get some business done. Obviously,
doing it now. You're doing it now, though. Yeah, you're doing the negotiating.
Nothing can
now
really happen until January, but
so they'll have a goalkeeper surely in place at midnight on New Year. The bells go off.
Exactly.
Everyone's getting off each other, and then suddenly, yeah, but there's a Dundee United goalkeeper already in place with gloves on the front of the courier. Alan Temple with a cuddle with him. That's what I'm expecting at Hogmanay.
So yeah, but everybody's in the same boat. So it's going to be interesting to see what all teams come back after that spell. So we'll move on to the next match, and St Johnstone won, Motherwell won, and St Johnstone were third at one point on Saturday. It was a check on my phone that had me questioning my sanity on Saturday afternoon. How has that happened? It's like, as we've been saying, there's nothing in it again. There's just like nothing in it between a lot of teams this season. They took the lead through Dre Wright, but it was really some great work, a sort of trademark shimmy, if you like, from David Witherspoon, Qatar-bound David Witherspoon, that got St Johnstone in the lead.
You were wrong, Craig Anderson, a decade ago. You were wrong. Things don't change in a decade. I love it.
I'm pleased for him because, like, I thought, like, when it got to kind of, you know, September, August, September time, and he still wasn't back, and you're like, is he going to be fit? Is he going to make this? And I kind of assumed at that point that he was going to miss out. Seems to be a really popular player around the camp, which I think has probably helped him a lot. And they've got the 26, so good on him. Four Scottish players going to the World Cup is quite an interesting thing to happen. Sadly, none of them for us. But he had a good game. I assume the decision was already made, but if it hadn't been, then he definitely did everything to show. And maybe the opposite situation of Backes, where he's like, I really need to just get these minutes under my belt and show the manager I've still got this in me. And yeah, I thought the criticism of Liam Kelly for the goal was a bit unfair, because the defending, the really shit defending, is what causes that to look like a bad save to me. He has a shot hit him pretty hard from 10, 12 yards away. I think saving it, he probably should save it, but I don't think he can be expected to get too much more of a parry on it, because the range of the shot is just such that he's just got to get his hands to block it. I don't think...
Yeah.
I think that was unfair. And even at that,
he wouldn't get any time to start thinking about the technique of his dive and how he's going to get rid of it. He can only concentrate on fully reacting to a shot coming towards him. And it was lovely skill from Witherspoon, but to see Solomon buys it, I mean, the guy's sitting on his arse by the end of it, which is which makes him look a fool.
It's the only thing David Wotherspoon does. Like, it's a trademark Wotherspoon chop, or whatever they call it. Like, and it's one of these things. It's like Arjun Robin cutting in onto his left foot. Like, yeah, everyone knows what's happening, but they just can't
fall for it every time.
Wotherspoon does it in slow motion all the time. It's really, really slow. I love it. I like it when someone obviously figures out a skill in their own sort of way. It's a classic skill, the drag over. Don't get me wrong, the roll over the ball. But he's got his own sort of interpretation of it, and it's worked for him so many times.
He's a very elegant player to watch, and it's all upper body. That's what he doesn't sail it with his feet. It's his upper body. Mm. He's obviously, he could have been a ballet dancer in another life, I think. And
he's going to be on Strictly after he finishes playing.
After he wins the World Cup with Canada, and people in the rest of the UK actually know who he is.
But it's a cracking run for St Johnstone. They probably didn't want this break to come. I think it's five unbeaten or something. At the moment. And
they've started to get players back as well, and I said, and I still agree, that I don't think their squad's very good, but they have been able to get the pieces together and fit them together well, and it kind of is reminiscent of obviously a lot worse than their cup winning team, in the sense that double cup winning team, in the sense that all the pieces are now melding together really well. Like, the players really complement each other well, and that's good for them. Motherwell are the polar opposite. They will be delighted just to get a point.
2 seconds, I just wanted, before we move on from St Johnstone, I think it's weird because we're talking about Dundee United not having a defensive midfielder. St Johnstone are in the same position, but seem to have got around it somehow. Sometimes they'll play Ryan McGowan in there and it'll work. In other games, they'll have like a midfield two of Carey and Halberg or something, and that'll somehow work. So, yeah, I don't know.
Because the shape and the style and the tactics are all about sort of tightness and shutting up shot, they probably don't need a specific guy to hold the fort in that position, because the team's designed to sort of repel it, and it's never going to be a doubt. I mean, St Johnstone are a defensive team, and that is not a criticism. They are. That's what Davidson's built all his success on. But they did look like they lost a bit with Mitchell's absence. Got this weird sort of situation where Liam Gordon, who's his captain, plays, but they actually look worse, and he doesn't have the same ability. I imagine it's one of those that if Mitchell's playing, St Johnstone probably sort of go on and win this game. But it was another stodgy, horrible game. Molt starting up front with Van Veen. We've got expectation that, especially after the Hearts game, there was bits to like about those two when Molt came on, but I think Molt really, really struggled by all accounts. But again, he'll come up against less stingy defences than St Johnstone over the season.
Are Motherwell the team... excuse me. Sorry. Are Motherwell the team that should be worrying the most at the moment?
The break came at the perfect time for them. I think we worried about them at the start of the season when they were god awful in those European games against Sligo, when Alexander looked to have kind of lost the plot with them. They then obviously brought Hamill in, which was a good move, or at least a good move in terms of making the change. I don't know if Hamill's going to be the right man or not, but what they've ended up doing is, like, the results have just drifted and they're really not winning games anymore. And yeah, that point will make a difference in terms of a wee boost, and they really need to get on the training ground and change things. I think the problem with that front too is Van Veen doesn't want to run and Molt can't, so you're kind of losing a lot of mobility as a result, and Shields can probably run but has nothing else, so
Van Veen doesn't want to pass him the ball, so
yeah. So, probably quite rightly, but there's they need to probably focus on the attack as much as anything. I think the defense isn't great, but you can get away with a not great defence as long as you're creating chances, because then other teams start to worry about your attack and, you know, don't attack you as much. I think
just exactly what I was talking about with Hibs earlier, exactly that. You create a fashion where your vulnerabilities can't be got at because people are too worried about your strengths at the other side. And with Van Veen there, if you can compliment him, and I know Spittle started to come on to a bit of game, and I thought at first it was like one of those, I thought we got a classic Spittle goal where he hits a free kick and everyone misses it and it goes in, but then I noticed that it was actually a shot that takes a massive deflection. But I mean, St Johnstone, you always just have to doff your cap to them, because they do it nonstop, and we thought we got rid of them last season. but they've pulled it off, and now they'll probably end up finishing fucking top six, and other teams are going to get manager sacked because of that.
Back in Europe, another DVD.
Yeah, brilliant.
Right, let's move on. We've got two to go. Let's go on to Tynecastle, a match where Hearts managed to get a point from without actually scoring, going by the highlights package that I watched. Tony, is this a match where Livingston can feel hard done by that they didn't take all 3 points?
I think with the way that the game landed, they said they'll be hugely disappointed. I mean, the Hearts, a lot of times this season, I think their mentality's been great. They've proven it. I said a huge thing about Nielsen when I was on last week, so I'm not just going to repeat that, but the mentality of them is great. But there's a flip side where I think a lot of teams have let them off the hook this season, and I think this is another case. I mean, if you're missing a penalty against 10 men when you're already 1-0 up, and then multiple other chances, you can't really deny it. And I think Livingston played their way into the game. It was a proper Martindale sort of performance. You know, the masterclass, I suppose, is what you call these things. The sort of Hearts, I thought, actually started the sort of better team, as you would expect at home against Livingston. They were getting quite a lot of joy down the left-hand side. Mackay was getting into the game, seeing a lot of the ball, and Hearts were really, really focusing on that one side. But as the game went on, and Shanklin missed a really good chance, which was a really lovely sort of build-up for that. But then maybe about 30, 35 minutes in, you started seeing Livingston defenders being more willing to step out. So when Hearts were playing into Shanklin's feet, Fitzwater and Obelai were willing to step in front of them. Or what's the left-back's name? It's not Penrice anymore. It's the new guy. I've forgotten his name. Give me 2 seconds.
Montaño?
Montaño. Yeah, he's not new at all, but and he's been excellent this season.
Well, he's new to the left back.
New to the left back.
He was spot this season.
He was more willing to step out, and he was starting to dribble down the left. And Livingston, you just see they were growing and growing into it. Martindale doing the usual, where you're like, right. So Bruce Anderson has been playing really, really well recently, and now he's going to just be dropped out the team, and Pittman suddenly got dropped out the team. You know, he does this. He made a lot of changes specifically for this match, but they make sense. He loves Andrew Shinney in these sort of games where they go away for home, Easter Road, Tynecastle, Ibrox. You know, he really likes him, I think, because he likes the quality. So when the ball goes into Shinney, when they're sort of way more intricate moving up the park, they get a bit more space. They sort of move into Shinney like that, and Shinney's been great at that. He can also drop in the midfield, and he's probably got better defensive nous than Bruce Anderson will. And again, it worked for Martindale, and I thought Livingston were impressive at points, as they invariably are. And then the second half, they scored a really nice goal. Ball played over the top, nice touch into Kelly, and then it's an absolutely brilliant finish. But the goal for Hearts, man, they are my, like, I mean, I don't want to get into the VAR stuff and all the things that Martindale was saying that were possibly right, but just to talk about that finish, they are my favourite goals in football by a mile. The absolute near post hammers that just, like, they just flash it in it and you can't even see what's happened. And then Hearts sort of steal a point at the end. But Hearts did have a few more chances on top of that. I thought Hearts were poor, but they still probably had enough chances to deserve something from the game.
My input, we're rushing for time, and my irrelevant input is that I'm very confused about the names on the back of the two Kelly strips, because Stephen Kelly just has Kelly on the back of his strip. Sorry, Sean Kelly just has Kelly on the back of his strip, and Stephen Kelly just has S. Kelly. None of that
is
just
not ST. It's not ST Kelly.
It doesn't look like it.
Kelly.
Unless I'm missing something, but maybe it is, but it doesn't look like it is. I was trying to find a picture of it, but Kelly definitely just has, like, Sean Kelly definitely just has Kelly on the back of his, so who knows what's going on there. Livingston will be raging about that, but it's like you said about the character of Hearts, it's twice this season they've salvaged a point in the very last minute of stoppage time. Nubly just...
Just last the week
playable
the week before as well, 10 men against
Motherwell.
A result which showed a lot of character also.
But yeah, Livy should have won the game on the basis of, like, not only did they have the penalty, but they had all those breakaway chances. Nubly was at the centre of them all, and then it's just a one attack. They don't defend it well, but then also, I mean, you don't expect Ginelli to slam that in. You're kind of happy he's shooting.
That's 1 in 100 for him.
But yeah,
he's been huge for Hearts this season, because that was someone that was getting edged towards the door. And this is what happens sometimes when a team has so many injuries and they have to start looking back on someone that
he's now, even had his own.
And then Ginelli's
in
now,
that spell.
Okay, Ginelli's now basically, he's still a squad player, I think, with it when all the players are back. But I think now the fans and the management team will all be on Ginelli's side, and it won't be as frustrating. He's had much more of an actual impact. I thought, like, even the fans, when he missed that sitter before he scores the goal, the ball gets flashed across, he misses a sitter, and he ends up in the crowd, and everyone's sort of patting him on the back to keep going. I was like, that's a difference. I mean, Fowler was speaking about on a podcast about Rocky Bashiri and Tory Sibbick, about the sort of change in narrative around these players and the fans sort of coming together. I think there was an element of that. He comes in, he's missed a sitter in the very late in the game, and the fans are patting him on the back about, keep going, Josh. And that thing, maybe the fans are sort of going to his side. So, Hearts still somehow making it work. And you absolutely never know what's going to come when Hearts play. But I found myself, I really enjoy watching Hearts games because the other teams are in them. It's not like Hearts are ever turning anyone over. And the games end up getting really, really end to end. And with Hearts being quite vulnerable defensively and still having like quite a lot of quality going forward, it means that every game there's Hearts games have about 30 shots in them every single week, and there's decisions and stuff, so they're quite obviously towards the end of last season Hearts got quite boring to watch because obviously there's really nothing to play for and teams weren't really arsed about it. So they're good value to watch at the moment, Hearts, as a neutral, which I am not really, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, Ginelli's certainly an interesting one because he had to kind of bide his time to get his chance this season. And then since he's had his chance because of fitness issues, he's had a couple of niggling injuries himself, but that's just kind of been his career recently. But yeah, when he is on form, he can be somebody who is an option in a different couple of positions. I mean, he can sometimes play like he did at Ibrox through the middle and be an option for in behind with his pace. He can be an impact sub. The guy does have a bit of quality. He's just obviously not done it consistently enough for Hart. So yeah, when on form, he can be a good player. Let's move on to the final match, and that is Celtic 2, Ross County 1. Celtic continuing their dominance, only looking like one winner for the league at this point, 9 points ahead going into the break. And I mean, do you know what, we don't really focus too much on decisions and VAR. We try not to on this podcast, but it's kind of inescapable with this one. Although, were you disagreeing a little bit, Craig? Should we go to you first about this one? Did you say you maybe had a bit of sympathy about why this one was given?
I think under the rules, it probably is a penalty. I don't agree that it should be. I think the rules are shit. Like, I think...
Yeah.
Is it a deliberate handball? Of course it isn't. Does Matt O'Reilly have any intention of playing the ball with his hand? No. Does Matt O'Reilly put his hand there because he thinks he's going to block the ball? No. And that's what the handball rule should be. But is where Matt O'Reilly's hand is placed a natural position for a player's arm to be in that kind of defensive action? It probably isn't. And it's that interpretation of what is natural that's the problem I have with it, because I think they take natural, and I think the intention is for natural to basically mean is your hand kind of by your side. When you saw it, I don't know if the Kelly Hibs game, Fraser Murray went to block a ball on the edge of the box and he was literally running out with his hands like clasped behind his back.
Yeah,
the ball did cannon off him, and they obviously...
and he's struggling. He's losing balance because of it.
I don't agree with it. I don't think it's how it should be, but I think, and I specifically, especially think, given that the referee on the pitch gave that as a penalty, I don't disagree with the decision not to overturn it. I think they shouldn't ever step in to give a penalty in that situation. But when the ref actually awarded it kind of live, I don't see how VAR can say it's not a penalty. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think the whole implementation or interpretation of that rule is nonsense. But the referees can't act, you know, they can't make up the rules as they want them to be.
Just such a fucking we've done it enough times, but I mean, I hate VAR. It's actually starting to get to the point where it's not just because there's been a couple of decisions recently that have went against Hibs. It just, for the word go, I was really upset about it, and it's starting to ruin the game. It's ruining the spectacle for people going, and it's starting to get borderline a bit upsetting because it's shit. It's just shit, and it's ruining something that you love and that you spend so much time with. And it's unfair on every single person, including referees. It's shit for them, and it's not done anything to remove like any of the controversy. It's added controversy, if anything. And it's just
a lot of the people that were moaning about it before it came in were right. I wasn't one of those people. I was one of the people that was just staying quiet about it. I mean, I'm not as anti-VAR as some people on the podcast, but I'm anti VAR that's a shambles. I mean, yeah. I'm
the VAR light was always had a works. Horrible like run a horrible ring to it. VAR light. So we're getting a lesser system with part-time refs in a country that's very volatile about its football and decisions.
Exactly.
It's just going to be.
But this one that we're talking about is more to do with the handball rule. And again, as we were kind of talking about just before we came on air, I was saying that, or was I actually asking the question, is it because we have spent years rewriting it, and now we are at the point where that cliche that used to just be empty and meaningless, or nobody knows what the rule is, that's actually the reality now. Nobody knows, because everybody's got a different interpretation of what it is. And to go to what you were saying about natural, the issue with that is that there's no context to what natural means. So natural... okay, it can mean arms by your side, but natural should mean relevant to what you're doing in that moment. So natural can mean an infinite number of things, basically.
It's like Bernabe for that penalty last week when he was jumping. He had his elbows out like that because he's in the midst of trying to header a ball. He missed it.
Yeah,
so in that situation, I do think that is a natural place for your arms to be. But those penalties get given, they do get given a lot. And again, I didn't think that was a penalty, but it is. A lot of those get given because of that rule.
But again, that one to me was a lot worse than this one, on the basis that the ref didn't give that. Mm-hmm. When the ref doesn't give it, it's not glaring. Don't get involved. VAR is not meant to get involved.
Mm-hmm. That's the big issue as well.
And that's why at this one it's
the
like
clear and obvious.
You can talk about that. If VAR didn't exist, that would still have been given as a penalty, and it was awarded as such. But I think you're right, Craig. The way the handball rule is at the moment, it used to be deliberately handles the ball. Now, very rarely do players actually deliberately handle the ball, but the one that was more frequent was made their body bigger in an attempt to make themselves a bigger target to block it. That is what it should be for unnatural. And then you're saying, well, did that player run? Did that player make any effort to not be hit by the ball? Do you know what I mean? Like, did they run with their arms out doing a star jump? They're not trying to handle the ball, but they're making it possible that they do. Or is their arm just up because, they turned round and it happened to be, by mistake, flailing about? And that's the problem. But too many people whinged and moaned about, why is that not given? Why are the rules not clearer? They've tried to make them clearer. They've made them 10 times worse. And I said to you before we came on, I think it's going to come to a head big time at the World Cup. There's going to be some ridiculous interpretation of it at the World Cup. And I think we'll see another change. I don't think the change will make it any better, personally. Celtic, two beautiful goals. They are just miles ahead of everyone else in the league. That's the fact of it. Now they've stumbled a wee bit in terms of how commanding they've been in these games leading up.
That was always going to happen. I think Andrew's done really well in terms of last season. Everyone used to talk about the. Like maybe he was asking too much of them and they were looking tired and all that stuff. But you can see that that's not been a narrative at all this time. And with having the full pre-season, a proper pre-season with them, you can see how much fitter they are as a team. And they don't really have any sort of, I've got no worries about them being able to continue, even with the congested fixture list they just had there. They've never really missed a beat.
We have to play them twice in 6 days in January. I'm really looking forward to that.
All the best.
Cup semi-final in the second one as well. But the Turnbull goal, the movement is fantastic. Nice to see Turnbull get a goal. I think it's a shame for him in particular, because I think he could have done with being involved in this Scotland game. But obviously, flying him out to Australia, much more important. And Haksabanovic's finish. I think he's got the best feet in the league.
Oh, man.
His finish is incredible.
That's a contender
the way he digs it out.
goal of the season for me. Just the build up and the finish. It's just that it's got one of those lovely sort of that last pass before the first time finish. I love that sort of. I don't know how to explain it properly.
It's like poetry, the almost. The way, like,
the aesthetic of him running in the same direction as the ball coming to him. I don't know. It was just
Malcolm, like Ross County, there are a lot of criticisms of how they play, but he does seem to know how to set a team up mostly to play at Celtic Park and frustrate them a bit.
A team that didn't want the break to come.
Yeah, they didn't, and they didn't do anything. They didn't necessarily create any chances apart from, you know, maybe one on the break and plus the handball decision that they didn't, that there was no chance there. That was just, I was calling on lucky dip penalties, a bit like the Kelly one. It just appears out of nowhere. It's not related to the game in any way whatsoever. Just a penalty appears and there's a goal. But they did kind of frustrate Celtic quite a lot. But the problem is, when you're playing against a team with that quality, it doesn't matter how well you structure things, they'll find ways to score, and that's what we saw. But I think you're right, they've done well in the last few weeks, and I think they would have been happy to play a few more games before the break, and we can only hope that the break destroys them.
And on that note,
okay. Yeah, I don't know where to go from there, really, other than let's get the fuck out of here before he says something else. Thanks everyone for listening. If you want more, you know that you can jump over at the Patreon. And for as little as £2 a month, all the way up to £7 a month, you can get lots of extra content. That's patreon.com/terracepodcast. Otherwise, the guys will be back on this feed on Thursday. And all we've got to do now, guys, is just say bye and get out of here. Say bye.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.